Chapter 8. Screamed Chartreuse's kitten, slashing at the nose of the other cat. The larger honey-colored animal hissed and backed away, its ears flattened against its skull, its tail puffed out to twice its usual size. Barking joyfully, a wandering hound took off after the cats, chasing them around the moat to the lowered drawbridge. A tinker stepped out of their way as the cats tore past. The kitten streaked over the gap in the boards, but the older cat missed its footing and slipped, falling through the gap and into the moat with a splash. As the kitten disappeared under the portcullis, the cat floundered in the water, its eyes frantic as it turned in circles, trying to find a way out. It might have made it had one of the larger fish that lived in the moat not come by and dragged it under the water. The cat yowled as it sank below the surface. Then all that was left to show it had been there were a few drifting bubbles. Grisina stepped to the edge of the moat, clutching her bucket of toadstools as she peered into the silt-laden depths. Then out of the water shot Chartreuse, spluttering and splashing, her streaming hair half covering her face. Blood mixed with water trickled from a scratch on her nose as she made her way to dry ground, paddling at first, then wading when her feet reached a rocky ledge. "Need a hand?" Grisina asked, bending down to reach for her sister. Chartreuse looked startled when she saw her, and not at all pleased. "No?" she said, her lips stiff as she climbed out of the water. "I don't need anyone's help, especially not yours. I hope you're happy. Rinaldo left at dawn this morning, and it was your fault. I just know he heard about your turtle incident." Ignoring the gaping mouths of the farmers and merchants who had witnessed her misfortune, Chartreuse pushed her way through the usual morning crowd that had come to do business in the castle and limped across the drawbridge. Grisina saw her stiffen when Pietro passed under the portcullis, giving him only the briefest of nods. The prince turned as if to follow Chartreuse, but seemed to think better of it and continued across the drawbridge. Grisina shook her head when he stopped to talk to a group of farm girls carrying heavily laden baskets. She was watching the girls vie for his attention when her gaze fell upon a middle-aged man in homespun on the back of an old plow horse, its sides lathered from running too long and too fast. The man's face was pale despite his exertion, and his eyes had a hunted look. The man was still astride his horse, arguing with the guard stationed at the end of the drawbridge, when Grisina approached them. "I'm telling you," one of the guards said to the man, "you can't see the queen. She's indisposed and won't see anyone." "But it's important. A terrible thing has happened, and Queen Olivine needs to know. I have to talk to her."
"Perhaps I can help," said Grisina, stepping up to the guards. Seeing the princess, the guards dipped their heads in deference, then swatted the man who didn't do the same.
"'Tis Her Royal Highness, Princess Grisina," said one of the guards. "Show some respect."
"Pardon, Your Highness," said the man, slipping off his horse and turning to Grisina. "My name is Hal of Darby and the Woods. Dare I ask if you can help me? I must see the Queen, yet these men tell me it isn't possible."
"What would you see her about?" asked Grisina. "I need to know if I'm to help."
The man shuddered as if what he had to say was too horrible for words. Glancing furtively at the guards, he inclined his head toward Grisina and whispered,
"A pack of werewolves attacked my village last night. I came at first daylight. We need the help of the Green Witch. 3 men are dead and 2 others were bitten, yet still live. We locked them in Farmer Gibbs' shed, but who knows if it will hold when the change comes on them."
A sick feeling soured Grisina's stomach.
"The guards were right. You can't see my mother now, but maybe I can talk to her for you."
"Would you?"
Hal asked, hope displacing some of the fear in his eyes.
"We're in sore need of her help. Frankly, we're surprised she hasn't come already, seeing that the Green Witch knows everything that goes on in Greater Greensward."
"Not everything," said Grisina, "and it's come as a surprise to us as well. I'll go see the Queen, but I don't know if she'll help."
"Thank you, Your Highness," said the man.
He looked so grateful that Grisina found it almost embarrassing.
The day before, Olivine had moved her magical paraphernalia down into one of the cells, turning it into a workroom where she could concoct her potions and practice her spells. Grisina had yet to visit her there, and had been putting off taking her mother the toadstools she'd demanded.
Now, after promising the villager that she would talk to her mother, Grisina could no longer delay. She thought at first that it might be hard to find her mother in the warren of rooms that made up the dungeon, but a thump, her mother's screech, and an even louder crash told her where to look. Grisina bit her lip, wondering what her mother had done this time. Following a loud tapping sound, she turned a corner where a damp-smelling fog of rotting meat and skunk cabbage enveloped her. The fog was oozing out of the wall just outside her mother's door, growing thicker the longer she stood there. It was enough to make her eyes water, so she wiped them on her sleeve and tried to take shallow breaths as she took one step, then another. When the wall in front of her bulged and receded, she had to rub her eyes. Everything looked different from inside the fog. The ceiling seemed to shift above her, the floor rippled at her feet, and a window opened in a wall, then closed with a snap. Taking two quick steps, Grisina left the fog behind, and suddenly everything looked normal again. Light flashed in staccato bursts from a doorway up ahead.
"Oh, no, you don't!" shouted Queen Olivine.
There was a thump, and the light flashed brighter, then died down to a wavery, uneven glow. Steeling herself against whatever her mother might do, Grisina reached the door and peeked inside. Olivine was standing in front of a large cauldron, stirring its contents with a spoon as long as her arm. Each time the spoon made one full circuit of the pot, it hit the rim with a loud tap. A book lay open on a table near the door. Grisina craned her neck to read the spell titled Releasing Trapped Magic. She'd read only a few words when she smelled the fog again, so she stepped into the room to get out of its way and bumped into the table. Olivine spun around and glared at her daughter.
"What are you doing here? Don't just stand there staring like a gargoyle. Come in and give me those toadstools."
Before Grisina could move, Olivine had crossed the room and snatched the bucket from her hand.
"Here," she said, thrusting the spoon at her. "Make yourself useful."
While her mother examined each toadstool individually, Grisina stirred the viscous liquid, wrinkling her nose at the frothy, hairy scum that floated on its surface. "There's something I need to tell you," she said.
"When I'm finished," her mother grumbled.
Then she sniffed another toadstool. Light flashing in the corner of the room made Grisina turn her head. A lidded wicker basket sat on the floor, isolated from the rest of Olivine's belongings. Tiny lights sparked through the gaps in the weave, like coals flaring in a dying fire. Suddenly, the basket fell on its side with a thump and began to roll. As it passed Olivine, she kicked it without looking up from what she was doing, sending it thudding into the wall. The basket buzzed angrily, then rolled back into the corner and flung itself upright.
"Let this be a lesson to you, girl,"
Olivine told Grisina.
"Never collect insects in a thunderstorm expecting to get more effective lightning bugs. The darn things spark, but they don't have any real light. The crickets are the worst. It made them bad-tempered and smarter than they should be. Can't do a thing with them."
"Why did you choose crickets?"
"Bugs are bugs, aren't they?"
Glancing at the cauldron, Olivine said,
"Watch what you're doing,"
and pointed a crooked finger at the bubbling liquid. Grisina looked down to see it burble and ooze over the rim.
"Hit it!" shouted Olivine. "Use the spoon and whap it hard!"
Grisina whapped the concoction with the spoon, sending droplets flying. The liquid stilled, then slurped back into the cauldron. "What's in this pot, anyway?" Grisina asked.
"None of your business," Olivine snapped.
Elbowing her daughter aside, the witch dropped in three carefully selected toadstools, one at a time. When the third one was sucked in with a glorp, the liquid frothed as high as the rim of the pot before settling back down to a steady seethe. Olivine's long nose quivered when she leaned over the pot and sniffed. "I really need to tell you something," Grisina began. Her mother held up her hand imperiously, saying,
"Not now. Can't you see that I'm busy?"
After another deep sniff, she dumped the rest of the toadstools into the pot, crowing with delight when it turned a sickly shade of blue. While Grisina retreated to the doorway, Olivine took a grisly-looking hook off the wall and dipped it into the pot, pulling out a dripping stocking.
"If you want something done right, you have to do it yourself," said Olivine, draping the stocking on a ring embedded in the wall. "That makes two pairs. Get a little potion on your clothes, and suddenly no one wants to wash them for you. I was going to make you do it, but I decided that the wash water would work just fine as the base for my next potion. Hand me those leech lips and stand back. I should get a good reaction when I add them.
Grisina studied the bottle labeled leech lips. Some of the little brown squiggly things inside smacked themselves while others smiled or pouted. She told herself that it was the water sloshing that made them move, but she wasn't so sure. I came to tell you that werewolves attacked a village last night, she said, handing the bottle to her mother. Olivine's eyes brightened.
Really? Where?
Darby in the woods. A man came to see you about it.
Did they kill any of the werewolves? Darby in the woods isn't far from here. I could be there and back in two shakes of a snake's tail.
I don't think they did.
Then why are you telling me about it? Unless someone has collected a werewolf's whiskers or the last hair on the tip of its tail, I'm not interested.
Uncorking the bottle, Grisina held it over the cauldron and shook out a few blubbering lips. The liquid seethed for just a moment, then became as placid as a lake in winter.
Drat, muttered Olivine.
You're the Green Witch, said Grisina. It's your duty to protect the kingdom.
Duty, schmooty! Do you see a ring on this finger?
Olivine shoved her hand under her daughter's nose.
I'm no more the Green Witch than you are. If you don't mind, and even if you do, I have to get back to work. Now scat! I don't have time for all this tongue-flapping.
If you're not the Green Witch, then who's going to protect the kingdom? And what should I tell the man? I'm sure he's going to want... The basket filled with lightning bugs fell over with a whump, bursting open and letting all the bugs escape in a crawling, skittering, leaping, flying rush.
Now see what you've done, shouted Olivine. You've distracted me. It's going to take hours to catch those pesky pests, and I still haven't finished my laundry.
Maybe I could, Grisina began.
Get out,
her mother shrieked, taking off her shoe and hurling it at her daughter. Grisina darted from the room, ducking when the second shoe sailed past her head. Olivine was still shouting at the insects as Grisina turned the corner, grateful that her mother had cast a shoe and not a spell. What's the ruckus about? King Aldred asked from an open doorway. Grisina stopped and turned. She hadn't realized that her mother had claimed a room so close to her father's. Did you know that Mother is no longer the Green Witch? It makes sense, of course. I mean, the Green Witch is the most powerful and the nicest witch in the kingdom, and no one can claim that Mother is nice anymore. But if she isn't, then who is? Do you think we should... Wait a minute, what's wrong with you? She took a step closer, noting his sunken cheeks and the dark circles under his eyes. You look awful.
It's good to see you too, he said, giving her a weak smile.
I just... Are you all right? Her father had begun to cough so hard that he shook with the effort and had to look away until it was over.
I've seen better days, he wheezed when he could talk again. Why did you come to see your mother? Is something wrong?
Grisina nodded. A man came to tell us that werewolves attacked people in his village.
And your mother doesn't intend to do anything about it, does she? Then I'd best see to it.
You can't hunt werewolves. You're ill. King Aldred shook his head.
There won't be any hunting involved. Werewolves turn back into their human form during the day, so my men and I will set traps and check them tomorrow. I was very adept at catching werewolves before I met your mother, but I haven't had to trap one since I moved to Greater Greensward. There was no need with the Green Witch watching over the kingdom. We were spoiled when your mother protected us, but now that she isn't doing that, we'll have to handle it ourselves the way rulers of other kingdoms do.
But you should be resting.
It's just a cold. I'll be fine. A little fresh air will do me good.
Grisina was worried. She followed her father out of the dungeon, returning to her own chamber while he sent for the men he intended to take with him. She already had the necessary plants dried and hanging from her ceiling, so it didn't take long for her to mix a tonic for his cough. To her dismay, he and his men had already departed by the time she returned downstairs. With the tonic tucked safely in her purse, Grisina hurried to the stable and had her palfrey, Buttercup, saddled. Since she didn't know the way to Darby in the woods, she was glad that the head groom insisted on accompanying her. Normally, she would have chatted with the groom as they rode, discussing the weather, the crops in the fields they passed, and any unusual plants they happened to see. but she was so worried about her father that she couldn't think about anything else. The sun was still climbing when they reached the point where the road to the village entered the forest. At first, Buttercup seemed to enjoy the cooler air of the forest shade, pricking her ears and looking around with great curiosity. But after a time, she began to act nervous, startling at the smallest sound and snorting when the shade grew deeper. The groom's normally placid horse also seemed uneasy, prancing sideways when a squirrel ran in front of him. Buttercup shied at a dark spot on the road, fighting the reins until Grisina brought her under control. They reached Darby in the woods without further incident, just as her father and his men were riding out of the village in the opposite direction. Of all of Chartreuse's suitors, only Prince Limelin had elected to accompany the king. The two royals rode side by side through the strangely quiet village, the single road dividing the cluster of cottages devoid of children, dogs, or geese to challenge a stranger's approach. Here and there, anxious faces peered from doorways, but no one came out to speak to Grisina as she passed by. A silent group of men stood in the shadow of the last cottage, watching the king and his knights, turning their attention to Grisina only after Buttercup whinnied to the other horses. One of the villagers, a tall man with long, dark hair, stared at Grisina openly without any of the deference commoners usually paid to a princess. He made her feel so uneasy that she urged her horse to a gallop, joining her father in a shower of dust and pebbles.
"Grisina," he said, turning his horse to face her, "what are you doing here?"
"Looking for you," she replied. "I brought you this." Reaching into her leather sack, she drew out the bottle of tonic and held it up for him to see. "It's for your cough."
"I appreciate your thoughtfulness, but that was neither necessary nor wise. These woods aren't safe if there are werewolves around."
"But you said that werewolves were active only at night."
"That isn't the point. Men from the village are already trying to track them down. Any hunters still out here will be using whatever means they can. It's during times like these that I particularly want you to stay close to the castle. Fear can make people do terrible things."
The king looked around, letting his eyes fall on two of his men.
"Stay behind and see that we're not followed. There were no dogs in that village, which probably means that the werewolves have already disposed of them. Werewolves hate dogs because dogs hate werewolves and can find them when no one else can. I would have brought my own if I'd been thinking straight. No matter now. Just keep your eyes and ears open. Some of the villagers may have turned into werewolves already and would be happy to see where we place our traps. And as for you," he said, looking at his daughter, "you'll have to stay with me now. We'll be returning to the castle as soon as we've dug some—"
King Aldred broke off when a deep, racking cough made him close his eyes and grip his saddle to keep his balance. Grisina watched with concern until her father's cough subsided. "Please try the tonic," she said, uncorking the bottle and handing it to him.
"Did you make this, or did your mother?"
he asked, sniffing it suspiciously.
"I did. It should help calm your cough."
"You're a very thoughtful girl," he said, just before taking a sip from the bottle. "Just like your mother used to be," he added, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
No one spoke as they rode into the forest, leaving the village and the two knights behind. They hadn't gone far when a horse whinnied deeper in the woods. The party stopped to wait while Prince Limelin and three knights rode off to investigate, returning with an armored destrier, its head hanging as it limped across the forest floor.
"I think that's Clarence's horse," said Grisina.
Even in the shade of the tall trees, she could see that the armor of the riderless horse was no longer bright and shiny, but was smudged with something dark. Slipping off her mare, Grisina ran to the destrier and reached for his bridle, where a singed scrap of pale green ribbon still dangled. A smear of black came off on her finger. It was soot. As her father rode up, she raised her hand to show him. Rubbing her thumb and forefinger together, she said in a subdued voice,
"I guess there really was a dragon after all."
With the destrier slowing them down, the knights didn't go far before stopping to lay the first trap, just far enough that no one from the village could hear them. While some of the men dug a deep hole, others cut down branches and saplings, whittling the ends to make sharpened stakes. Once King Aldred declared the hole deep enough, one man was lowered in to line the bottom with the stakes, angling them upward so they'd impale anything that fell in. When he was finished, they rode on to the next likely spot, leaving two more men behind to cover the hole and erase any sign of the trap. "How do you know where to put them?" Christina asked her father when they'd stopped once again.
"We dig the traps near the road where a werewolf might lie in wait for an unsuspecting traveler. Werewolves are stronger and faster than either man or wolves. They have the wolf's fangs and a man's intelligence, yet they avoid fair fights whenever possible. For all their nasty, brutish ways, werewolves are basically cowards. They hide from their prey where the wind will carry their scent away, sneaking up when they are sure to take them by surprise. Only stout locks and tall trees will keep them at bay, because they can neither manipulate locks with their paws nor climb higher than they can jump."
Christina shuddered as she peered into the deeper gloom of the forest. "What should I do if I see a werewolf?"
"Just stay in the castle," said her father. "It's the only place you'll be truly safe, especially if there are dragons around as well."